Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hi, listeners. I'd like to invite you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, download our ebook on organic gardening basics, and get started on building your very own organic oasis today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am super excited to introduce you to my next guest, who has been a local friend of mine for a really long time. And I can truly say this woman is brave, living in the wilds of Montana, because not very far from her house, I saw one of the coolest sights I have ever seen. Last spring, I was driving near her home late at night, and I saw this pile in the middle of the road and thought, what is that? And suddenly this heap came to life, and there was a whole family of mountain lions wrestling in the middle of the road. And then the mom and, like, I don't know if there was one or two, ran off on the side, and two of them just go tromping up the road right in front of me till we came to like a T, and then they ran up the hill, and their mom was like up on the edge of the forest, and they took off running after her, and it was just the coolest thing. And so here today to speak to us from the true wilderness of Montana, I'm excited to introduce my guest, Dr. Alice Elrod.
Well, thank you, Jackie.
Yeah. So
thank you. And living here and having cats and dogs, I appreciate your joy. I have seen mountain lions out as well, and I love them. But when I'm going out to get wood at night and my dog is barking and my cats are freaking out, it makes me a little nervous sometimes, because you just don't know what's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Yep. It's cats, or usually cats is what you're scared about. But I've also had bears. Mm-hmm. That have attacked my that's a terrible thing, that have gotten into my compost heap. Mm-hmm. And we've had to, unfortunately, had a bear last year trapped on my and relocated by Fish and Wildlife on the property. And it just, you know, it's just a part of what happens here. And so what you do is, like with the cats, there's nothing you can do. I mean, they're just around. With the bears, it's doing things that you can do to make sure that they're not attracted to it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's very important, because we live here, they live here. And I know from talking to Tim Thier, who is a fish and wildlife specialist, that when you relocate something, you're taking something out of its natural environment and moving it. And so to me, the important thing is to make it so that you don't have anything that's an attractant. I don't have any animal food outside, and I try to have it so that my compost heap is something that they can't get into, that they're not attracted to, because you want them to move through. They always move through, and that's cool. And that's good. It's like, okay, yeah, I see a bear in my yard. All right, okay, so everybody's inside, nice, and it keeps moving through. But I don't want to create an environment where they're going to keep coming back and be dependent on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But lots of us do live here like that and just get along just fine.
Absolutely.
I would like to see, I know people have seen mountain lions on my road, but I haven't ever seen one here. And we've seen one bear. We've been here 23 years, and I've only seen one bear in our
yard. Only seen one bear. Wow.
I've seen lots of bears, but I've only seen one bear on our property in our yard.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're stealth. You don't always see them. They're there.
They are. Anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been here for 27 years. And I am a chiropractor. I started out in the Forest Service and was doing that for 10 years, and went back to school and became a doctor of chiropractic, and have been practicing in Eureka for the past 13 years. Since this is a gardening show, we'll talk about that, is that I was raised in the Midwest, and my mother had a huge garden, and we lived off of it. That, and they would get a side of beef from a neighbor. We were sort of in a little bit of a rural area. We were not farmers, but So I was raised with the concept that you raise your own food and you put it up and spend a lot of time in my childhood breaking beans and hoeing rows and stuff like that. And then went to, college and school. I was in the Peace Corps in Kenya. And with that, I spent a lot of time with farmers and learned a lot about subsistence farming. And when I got out of that, I came to Montana and worked, like I said, for the Forest Service, and was really impressed by how closely the cultures were between where I was in Kenya and here, is that they live very closely to the environment and also depend upon each other as neighbors and friends for the support, because they were rural areas. And I think that I'm very attracted to that. I love it. I love living with that. And since being here, I have gotten into gardening myself. Like I said, I was raised with that, and that's what we did. That's just what we did. Mm-hmm. I actually am the only child of my family of five that still does that, and who I still do canning and raising food. And for one thing, it gives me something to talk to my mother about, which is really pretty fabulous. She thinks it's great. We trade stories on gardening and stuff. And also, I am fortunate to have found a large group of friends who do the same thing. And we exchange ideas. I rely on them. I have what I call the hotline for gardening of people like Eve Clowers and Karen Lamb, that it's like, if something not's going right, I'm like, okay, so I'm trying to do this. Could you tell me how I can do this? And to tell you the truth, gardening up here in Montana is a lot different than gardening in the West. It's like, well, for one thing, our growing season is a lot shorter, and holy crime, I mean, that makes a big difference. And like,
especially where you are.
Yeah, Intrigo. I know. And so you just kind of, you start out, you can't hope to put anything in the ground before May. And even then, you have to cover it with row cover or plastic. And then generally what you have to do at the end of the season, which is in August, or September, you have to cover it again because you've got frost at both ends of the season, mm-hmm. which is so different. I mean, my mother used to put things, it's like you put the potatoes in by St. Patrick's Day. Well, you put it, you can't even dig in the ground St. Patrick's Day here. Can't dig in the ground until the beginning of May here. And so that is a huge difference. But it's a wonderful thing here in this little community of having people who have been doing it for longer than I have, that I have that great group of friends and people that I can call, like I said, the hotline, and say, well, okay, what do I do now? And then they give me a lot of really good information on that.
Yep. So,
and that's fabulous. I love it. I love it. You get into this whole thing of if I may, I'll just keep going.
Okay.
One thing that I have noticed is a difference between here and in the Midwest. In the Midwest, the soil is black. I mean, you look at it like you could eat it. It's just beautiful. And here, one thing I have, the soil layer, and I know this from being a forester, is that there isn't a very big soil layer. And so for one to start a garden, you have to do what I call playing God. You have to create soil, because the soil layer is either non-existent or it's very, very shallow, like half an inch, if that. You know, some people in like the floodplains, you get into it, then you get into a lot of silt, but then it just doesn't sustain itself. And so you have to always look at it. You have to supplement the soil. Mm-hmm. You have to add manure and peat to my soil every year to try to grow the garden and dig it up. And then the silt is it gets very compact. And so you have to break it up with like sand or peat and also manure and just like kind of keep doing it. And that with the temperatures and the short days, it makes it very challenging to grow food here.
Yeah.
But very worthwhile. Mm-hmm. Very worthwhile, because once you get it figured out, then, I mean, there's nothing that I think I enjoy better than, well, I'd say than to get up in the morning and go out and pick my food for the day. Mm-hmm. And the only thing better is to come home in the wintertime and have food in the freezer or have food that I've canned. And just, it's like, wow, I grew this. This is really cool, you know? It's delicious. It's organic. And I just totally love it. But it's a process. It's totally a process here.
Mm-hmm. We had good, organic, delicious summer food tonight. We had mm-hmm. soup. And what did I have with it that I was telling Mike that was so good? Mm. And last night I had leftover eggplant parmesan that I had frozen from the summer. Mm. That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eggplant grows really well here.
We're finally figuring it out, or Mike is anyway. I grew a lot of eggplants this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you do with your eggplant?
Yeah. What do I do with them? A lot of them just didn't make it. I was going to freeze a bunch of eggplant parmesan, but I only got one batch froze. But I did talk to somebody the other day. She's going to be on. Her show hasn't actually aired yet, I think. But she was explaining to me this really cool way of freezing. Like, she roasts the eggplant in the oven and then just scoops out the pulp and just puts that in the freezer. And she said it's really good in soups and sauces and things just like that.
I did that this year. Cool. I did that this year, yeah. And I think one tip is that when you do stuff like that, is that you do that and then you spread it out on a cookie sheet.
Oh.
And so that it's, you can, you know, slice it into little pieces and so it's not like clump.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, pull it into, and I found that with zucchini as well, grating it up, putting it out on cookie sheets, and then putting it into bags so that you can put it into soups.
Oh, okay, cool. I like that.
Yeah, so that works well. I didn't come up with that idea. Somebody gave it to me. And so it's like, okay, so we'll extend it to, I mean, we do with huckleberries, right? When you go and you pick huckleberries.
Yeah.
And you clean them and then you spread them out on cookie sheets and then put them into the bags so that you can pull out handfuls of them as opposed to, again, block O. And it really works with greens. I mean, greens grow really well here. I love collards. I have a southern roots, and so I love greens of all kinds. And they do grow really well here. They're actually still growing in my garden now. I mean, I've picked them, but it hasn't gotten really cold yet.
Hey, really? My spinach finally froze a couple of weeks ago.
Well, spinach is spinach. You know, spinach is not collards, and it's not mustard greens, which have a tendency to grow in past the frost season. But no, spinach is pretty short seasoned here.
Okay. I had a good batch of fall spinach this year. My spinach in the spring just bolted right away. But we let it go to seed and it just came back and it was its best like a month ago. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, it's a cool weather crop actually. Mm-hmm. And it kind of got to that point where it was like it froze and then it got a little warmer, and so yeah, things like that. I should go out and check my spinach in the garden. I haven't checked it. I thought everything was dead up in that garden. I have different garden spots. I have, because I live in Trigo, there's trees and there's like, I put all of my warmer crops actually in a fenced in area in my yard, not in my yard, in my driveway on the gravel. And that's where I grow my eggplant, my squash. And then I put the spinach and all the lettuces over where it doesn't get very much sunlight. And then I have, you know, you have to have choose different garden spots for the sunlight and everything. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it challenging, but it makes it kind of fun too.
Mm-hmm. I think and that, diverse.
And diverse, yeah. But this year was very different. This year was the first year. It was a long, hot year. And it's the first year that my beans didn't freeze out before I was ready for them to.
Right.
Did you have that same experience?
Mike picked a ton of beans. They just seemed to keep going forever.
It was
and
a
ever.
Great bean year. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I got so many beans by the time they froze out, it was like, oh, thank God. Yes, I don't need any more, and I'm tired of it. And I actually got red tomatoes. Amazing. Wow. For Trigo. Amazing.
Yeah. I don't think we got red. We got some red cherry tomatoes, but I think our tomatoes froze.
So normally that's all that grows, cherry tomatoes. I put other tomato plants out there just because I'm always hopeful. Ever hopeful. And I don't know why. It's like, why do I do this to myself? They just don't grow that well. But this year they grew great.
The guy whose episode got released this morning talks about greenhouse tomatoes and how to successfully grow greenhouse tomatoes. Uh-huh. Kind of gave me the impression once you do that, you'll never switch back. And he was talking about getting red tomatoes in 60 days. And he's in Vermont. So his climate's not all that different than ours, you know. But he just said, yeah, just doing it indoors in that. It's not as much a greenhouse as, like, you know, they put like stakes and plastic, like plastic row over.
Right.
It's not just plastic row cover. I mean, it's definitely more of a greenhouse thing. But the plastic walls will go up in the sides. So it like will ventilate in the summer. But then being able to keep them warm at night. And
are there temperatures?
The water.
Are their temperatures the same as ours? Because the thing that was different this year for tomatoes was that we maintained the temperatures at night that we normally don't. And that's the thing with tomatoes. It's like it can get up to 90 degrees in the day, but like around here, then if it drops down to 50 degrees at night, I mean, that's where you don't get really good, lush, ripe, delicious tomatoes unless you can maintain a nighttime temperature. And I think you could do that in a greenhouse as long as it was set up so that it would maintain that temperature.
Yep, that's exactly what he said, was holding right. That heat in. Yep. And then he just said, you know, they start blooming, they start turning red in June, and they just, the same plants keep growing, so they become like these monster plants, and they just keep harvesting them, and they finally top them off in September, so they quit growing in September.
Wow.
It was pretty interesting. Yeah. I was like, wow, June through September, that'd be a June, lot of tomatoes, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, so. I have an idea that I want to try is
okay,
to build a greenhouse and have it so that it has insulation around it. And I'm kind of thinking about toying with like tires. You put tires around it so they maintain, because they're black and you can fill them with soil, and that's not what you're growing the tomatoes in. But then having it so that they maintain the temperature at night. Mm-hmm. And I think we can do that, but it's also the sunlight. I don't know where we are with Connecticut as far as that, but it's with growing plants, it's not just the heat, but it's also the length of the daylight. And we have very short daylight here. Well, in the summertime, obviously, we have very long daylight, but then you don't get the heat. So I think that could probably work. It's something that I'm going to try.
Cool.
I think that could really work. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I'm really surprised is that we can grow really excellent garlic here.
Oh, why are you surprised about that?
Well, because garlic is a Mediterranean plant.
Oh, true.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
But it's such a great plant because you put it in the fall, in the late fall, you plant it and then you cover it in straw, and then it's the first thing that comes up, and it always comes up, and I'm just always so delighted with that. Yep. When it starts poking up through the straw, and it's like, oh, there's the garlic, and oh my God, it's early. Wow. It's cool.
Excellent. Yeah.
So we can do that. We can't do, there are some things we cannot do. And coming from the South, there's some things that I wish we could, but we can't grow okra. We can't grow sweet potatoes. We can grow potatoes. Potatoes grow very well here. But I'm working on that. I think it has to do with potatoes and onions. I think they have to do with having a really loamy soil, giving them enough room to produce. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing I'm working with constantly with my gardens, is trying to figure out how to make it less compact.
Do you do soil tests?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. I actually this year got, like a month ago, got a soil test for pH and for minerals.
And did you send it out, or just use one of those little thingies?
No, it's just one of those little thingies. Honestly, I found it in the thrift store.
Oh.
There was a thrift store, and there was this soil test kit. And I'm like, this is great! And so I haven't done it before, but I'm going to do it because I think that could be really helpful. Definitely. Okay.
That was one of Peggy Jean's big suggestions, recommendations, was do the soil test. And then I've had several people, like this girl, Sarah Harding down in Whitefish from Buggy Road Farm. They do microgreens down in Whitefish. And she talked a lot about soil testing. And a few of my other guests have. But Peggy Jean definitely was big on the soil testing. She's one of your hotline people.
Oh, definitely. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm going to talk to her about it and get her input on this. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Her and Eve were both some of my first guests, and I have not managed to connect with Corin to get her to say yes or no, or even ask her. I sent her a couple of emails. Anyway, tell us what organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening means to you, Alice.
Well, it means healthy food. It means you supplement the soil so that the plants can pick up the nutrients that they not only need to grow, but the ones that they can integrate into their fruits, so that you get the best that is possible. And it's environmentally friendly in that you are not adding chemicals to the soil. And so it's a win-win proposition that way. And it also means that you have to be willing to accept the fact that there's going to be some bugs in there. There's going to be some bugs on your food, and have to try and figure out how to deal with it. Like with, I use on my cabbages this year. I don't know. It was just such a great garden year. But normally...
Right? We didn't have the bugs in our cabbages this year that we've had in other years.
I know. And so normally I have to get out there and sprinkle some diatomaceous earth on the cabbages and the broccoli and try and get rid of things. I didn't have to do that this year. But it's... I did read there was a study that came out this year that, you know, I read a lot about this stuff. And they were talking about, we did this study and it said that with organic farming that, well, you don't get more nutrients, but what it means is that you get less herbicides and pesticides. And I thought, oh, really? Okay, hello, that's it. I mean, first of all, I don't believe that you don't get more nutrients if you're using really good, rich soil. But second of all, and perhaps most importantly, is that you don't have all the residues of the pesticides and herbicides. And that's, I don't want to put that in my body. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's very important that people avoid putting those chemicals into their system. And as a chiropractor and as a doctor, I totally appreciate that, is what that does to your body. And so it's healthier, but it's healthier for these reasons of not putting those chemicals into your body. That, what do they do to the plants? What do they do, you know, to the insects? And then you look at it and say, okay, so if they're killing that stuff, what are they doing to your body? And so I think it's just very, it's important that way. It's also important to a lifestyle where your lifestyle is healthy and healthier than, you know, going out and just buying crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're a super healthy person.
Well, you know, I try. Yeah. Yeah. And I find that, you know, I guess I like I said, I grew up with really healthy food. And I attribute that to the fact that I am healthy, is that that was how I was raised. And I continued that through my life. And yeah, and I'm reaping the benefits. You know, you feel good when you eat really good food. Why? Because you're giving your body what it needs. And then, of course, if I may, you get into the, it's diet, exercise, and a good mental attitude. That's what health is all about. Yeah.
And you always look good and super healthy.
Oh, thank you, darling.
Okay. So how did you learn how to garden organically? Is that the way your parents did it?
You know, I remember planting orange corn seeds when I was a kid.
Orange corn seeds?
Yeah, they were treated with, stuff. Right. It was, my dad would get manure from our neighbor who was a gardener. And it was a combination back then. They weren't focusing on organic farming. I think that when I moved here and started farming and started talking with friends who are specifically organic farmers also, but a good friend of mine in Portland with whom I lived for a year and a half was really into it. And so I learned more of really focusing on the importance of it as I got older. Mm-hmm. And specifically after I moved here and started my own garden.
Tell us about something that grew well this year.
Oh, the beans. Oh my God, the beans. Everything grew well. Mm-hmm. The broccoli, it just kept growing even through into September and October, but the beans were...
Oh, I know. I was like, we should have planted more.
I know. My cabbages were huge. I mean, just it was just such an amazing growing year this year. Such what didn't grow well. I'm working on my onions. I'm working on how to make bigger onions, and I haven't figured that out, but I'm going to talk to Karen about that because hers are just fabulous. Okay. But yeah, so no, it was just, I mean, I probably could have grown corn this year, but
we grew corn this year.
Did you? How'd it go?
It went really, really good.
Wow.
We got more than we ever did. But Mike planted, I mean, we put a new well in, so Mike planted like a mini farm this year. So we grew more of everything this year. But he grew two different kinds of corn, and both of them grew really well.
Wow. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. He saved a lot of the seeds. We'll give you some of the seeds.
You know, I really don't want to try to grow corn in Trigo.
Oh, good point.
Well, I don't have the space.
Okay.
That's another thing is that I have three little micro climates that I have to deal with. And so it's like even trying to rotate crops is difficult because of the space that I have in corn. I don't have room for corn, but I have friends who grow corn.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought of doing one of those little community spaces in town?
No, because no, I haven't. I mean, I'm aware of those and I think they are wonderful, but I love having a garden at my house. Mm-hmm. I love, like I said, getting up in the morning and picking my food. Mm-hmm. In the summertime, it's what I do. It's therapeutic. It's what I do at night. Mm-hmm. I go out and I dig in the soil. I plant things. You know, weed. I look at it. I just sit outside and I just look at it, and it's beautiful. And so, no, I'm fortunate to have space here at my house, and that's what I want to do. But I love the fact that that's available. I know a lot of people who do that, and I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, I was just thinking it might supplement some of what you do, but you probably do like a ton as it is. Tell us, is there something you're excited to try different next year that you haven't done before, or something you're going to do new?
Well, doing the soil testing is something new.
Okay, cool.
And I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about how to do that and to see, okay, well, maybe I should plant something, you know, different, do something different to supplement the soil in different areas. Yeah. As far as crops, I like what I grow, but no, I am honestly excited about trying to improve the way that I grow what I grow, because I love that.
Mm-hmm. And today after school, I interviewed this woman who wrote this book called The Lentil Underground. You might decide you want to plant some lentils if you listen to that episode, or check out her book. You would love her book.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're really good for building your soil.
Yes. And I have done that.
You have planted lentils? How'd that go?
Yeah. They didn't grow very well.
No. I have never tried to grow a lentil. I am super excited after all I've read about lentils. And then I went to this conference, to this workshop, and met the lentil guys themselves and learned about lentils. Like, I knew nothing about it. So I'm super excited to plant them next year.
Well, lentils, I mean, those are peas.
Mm-hmm.
And those are
legumes. Yeah.
And those are beans. And so we say, I haven't tried that. I've tried doing soybeans. That didn't work out. Lentils, as in lentils, the little flat little things that look like little discs. I have never tried to plant those, but I intentionally rotate my beans and my peas because of the nitrogen fixing qualities of those plants.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I totally do that. Why? Because, you know, it's just really good for the soil, breaks up the soil. You get the nitrogen fixing in the soil. But as far as different, I don't know, you know, if you find out something about that, different species that would grow well here, let me know. Because, yeah, no, that's a very great thing. And then you can do intercropping things. And that's another thing, too, is that I have been playing with this, like, planting plants that grow really well next to something else, even if you can plant some legumes next to something else, even though the legumes don't produce, then if they grow well, if they can supplement the soil, then I think that is a wonderful thing.
Yes, that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like rotating, like some years planting things that you're just going to turn back into the soil, and then other,
right.
But also you can harvest the lentils too. And they have like chickpeas and this rice called farro. That's pretty cool. And it's kind of neat to be able to grow rice. So we're excited to try that too. And I want to say some kind of cornmeal or corn for cornmeal. I'll let you know. Tell us about something that didn't work so well this season. Was there something that didn't go the way you thought it was going to?
Well, I did try something. It was called a Chinese cabbage, and it just didn't produce. It just didn't turn out well.
That's cool.
Yeah, again, I'm you know, trying to work into like getting the soil better for my carrots and my onions. And I think that it has to do with the loamy quality of the soil, that my soil tends to be really cakey. And so I think that that's something I'm working on.
Okay. What activity is your least favorite activity? Is there something you have to get out there and force yourself to do?
In the garden?
Yeah.
Oh, weeding is always a problem, isn't it? It's always a chore. But once you get doing it, then it's fun, because when you get done with it, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just love gardening. I just, when I get out there and I'm doing it, then the world dissolves. It's fabulous.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Picking food. Picking the food and looking at it. In fact, my dog Sam loves peas.
Oh.
the peas that you, the pod pea. Oh, there she goes. She just looked at me. The peas that you just pick off the vine and eat the pod peas. And I just love, I love like eating one and giving it to her. And she just, she comes running over and she just eats the peas.
Aww.
And yeah, so that's, yeah, go, yeah, just, yeah, going out and harvesting and eating it. But that, that truly is a, the truly wonderful thing to watch her just like, oh, here, give me a pea, you know.
Aw, cute. She looks like my mom's dog a lot.
Really?
Uh-huh. She reminds me of my mom's dog. Tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year everything was, or something was just so prolific you couldn't give it all away?
Oh, beans this year.
Okay.
The beans this year. My garlic.
Oh.
It just really does very well. And I do try to give it away. And but I use a lot of garlic, and so that's something. And eggplant, of all things.
Okay.
My eggplant does really, really well. Much to my surprise, because I really don't like eggplant.
Oh. What what are, do you have any secrets for like how you get your eggplants to grow? Because it seems like it took us a long time. Like we were always getting plants with flowers and beautiful, those beautiful purple flowers, but then they weren't producing. This last 2 years, Mike's really seemed to have finally caught on. But
Jackie,
what are your tips?
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know. I grow them out in, like I said, in my driveway, which is gravel. I have a space that I fence off. The thing, okay, you haven't asked what's the worst thing that I can grow?
What's that?
Zucchini squash. I know. The thing that everybody else has too much of.
Uh-huh.
I can't, I have a, and it's in the same area. I grow things out there in pots, and I think that I need to work on that. But my eggplant grows really, really well, and I have a terrible time growing zucchini and crookneck, yellow crookneck squash, which is to my great dismay because I love yellow crookneck squash. That's one of my favorite things. And I don't know. I've got to figure out how to do that.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, right. What's the worst thing you grow? Zucchini. Are you kidding? My God. Have some of mine. Okay. You know.
You know, to me, the secret to zucchinis is picking them when they're little. Like, I like to eat zucchinis, and then I don't always have a ton of zucchini because I like to pick them and eat them right away when they're little. And then I put them on everything. I put them on sandwiches and salads and pizza and just eggs and just when zucchinis are ripe in the summer, I just go right through them. But I pick them when they're small, when they're like,
well,
you know,
I do that, but it's like what you said with Mike. It's like I have copious amounts of blossoms, but I don't get the fruits.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know. My mom taught me something new this year about zucchinis, that some are males and some are females. And talked about, I don't know, that surprised me. I didn't realize that part. So could that have anything to do with it? Like having to hand pollinate them or something?
Yes. I think I need to do that.
Get a brush out there and...
Yeah, and hand pollinate.
That pollinate or something.
Right, right.
Do you have a lot of bees?
Actually, yes, actually. Yeah, I do. I'm thinking about that. It's like, have a lot. They're not just like covering the skies. But no, yeah, I don't have a deficit of them. But I'm thinking that perhaps that could be part of it. And so one thing that I have done this year, my bee bomb this year was fabulous. And I'm going to plant.
And that's like an herb, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And a flower. Beautiful flower. Beautiful flower. Yeah. And so I thought I might move some of that over to, actually I didn't think about that until just right now. And so thank you for reminding. That's a good idea. I can dig some of that up and plant it over to where I grow my squashes. I'll try that next year. Yeah.
All right. That's I might check back with you and see how that worked.
Yeah, I'll do that.
What's the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Depends on from whom. Okay, advice that was not spoken, but that was inferred was that it's a great thing, love it, do it. And take the advice of the people that you know have done it for a long time.
That's excellent.
No one ever said that to me, but that is what I've inferred from. Yeah. And it works. It's great.
It does. Have you ever entered a fair?
Not for gardening. But I got advice from Eve on that. I don't know if I should say this.
Well, we can delete it if we want to.
Oh my God, she told me. You know, Eve was the fair lady for a number of years. And she was just, you know, Eve. And she's like, you know, you have to like dig up your entire carrot crop and to get the perfect carrots. And you have to, it's so difficult to do it. And in Trigo too, I mean, it's like, I don't have anything that I could probably enter a green tomato contest, but other than that, yeah, no.
That's what Mike complains, that things aren't ripe enough for harvest yet, even where we are. So,
right.
Yeah. And then the thing I always hate is that you bring in your prize thing and then it sits there. When you get it back, it's all wilted.
I know.
Best thing I grew all summer. But
exactly. Exactly. I want to eat it. I don't want it just to sit on a shelf.
It needs to be shorter. Yeah. Like you should bring it Friday. They judge it Saturday. You can take it home Sunday morning.
Well, that's not how the fair works.
Nope, but sure isn't.
I know.
And they've been doing it for a long time. They don't want my advice.
My food is so precious. So when I pick it, I want to eat it. And I want to just like give it to somebody else to judge it.
So, okay. How about, what's your favorite tool? Like if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
A really good gardening trowel. I assume we're talking about gardening because I would also say chainsaw. No, a really good gardening trowel. Yeah.
Yes. All right. What do you have for tips for eating or harvesting vegetables on time? Speaking of my eggplant that I just couldn't harvest and couldn't just stay on top of. We're like in between the phase of like growing enough food for us, but it's not enough to really take anywhere. You know, it's like you have a little bit extra here and a lot extra there, but it's, you know, it's not enough to be consistent in town or, you know. We give a lot away, but
good. No, that's good. That's good. That's great. I think that grow what you know that you're going to use and utilize, and if you grow more than you can use, find somebody to give it to. Unfortunately, or fortunately, my cabbages were fabulous this year. I love cabbage. But I can't use it all. And so I had to give a bunch of it away. I made some into sauerkraut. And so you just, and then, but grow and use what you know you can utilize or give away. And then if you can't grow it, then know some place where you can get what you can use to supplement. Like I don't use a lot of potatoes. I grow some, but I know I can get some. I don't have chickens, but I know where I can get eggs. And God, I wish I had a root cellar. Get a root cellar.
We're working on getting a root cellar built.
That
I
is
thought Mike was going to get it done this year, but instead, do you know what we did? We got sheep.
Sheep.
We got four
root
sheep.
Cellar.
Nope.
You did?
Yeah.
Are you growing for meat or
for Shetland sheep? No, we're growing them to basically their manure to build the soil because of the soil issue. Maybe eventually they would be for wool. No, they're definitely not to eat. No. But mostly they're just here to poop.
Okay. Well, no, that's great.
And maybe eat some weeds.
Yes, absolutely. I have a good resource for horse manure.
Good.
Yes.
That's really handy.
Yeah, very handy, very fabulous. But root cellar. If I had one thing that I did not have that I would want, it would be that. I mean, you could put your potatoes, your carrots, your cabbages, and there you go. I mean, you're set. Okay, so next year, after the sheep.
Yeah. No, Mike started already, like, getting the area prepped and stuff, and he's on it. Do you have any secrets for preserving food or making it last? Like any of your canning secrets or anything?
There aren't really any secrets. No, I'm telling. I got this from Eve and from Karen about doing kraut, putting it into the jars. There are recipes for putting kraut in jars, and as opposed to into a big crock. And that's so much easier. And it is very easy. It's very delicious. And that's one of my favorite canning secrets. That other than that, get a pressure canner and just pressure can stuff. And, you know, follow the recipes. It's a lot of the recipes I found that, you know, I was raised with canning, and my mother would do jelly and she'd put paraffin on top, right? Mm-hmm. And so now they're saying, oh, no, you have to like water bath jelly. It's like, are you kidding? I mean, really? I mean, use some common sense here, you know, and with, with doing soups and doing soups, and I do a lot of soup. That I can for the wintertime is that minimal cooking, because you're canning it at an hour and a half, 15 pounds of pressure. It's going to cook the stuff. So you don't have to like cook the meat. You don't have to cook the vegetables. You just have to get them hot and put them into the jars and it sterilizes them. And that it's like, if anything comes out, and if the lid bubbles up, don't eat it. That's my advice.
Okay. What kind of soups do you can? That sounds so good.
I can venison stew. I can chicken soup. I can a marinara sauce, which is really nice. Black-eyed peas. I can, this zucchini chowder that is fabulous. Mm-hmm. It's with the chicken stock, throw zucchini in, corn, you know, blah, 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 and just do that. And this year I did a cabbage stew, which I don't know if I'll do it again.
Okay. I made delicious cabbage rolls this year that were so good. And then I kind of like, when I reheated them, I had to add some extra tomato sauce. So then I kind of made the next night, it was cabbage roll
soup. You froze them or you canned them?
I froze them.
Okay.
I don't do any canning. Cool. Mike does the canning at our house.
Mm.
Do you have any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods? Or weird or unusual techniques for cooking ordinary foods?
Like, what is a weird or unusual food? Well, greens. I mean, I guess that would be weird and unusual around here. I was raised in a southern house, and so I love greens. And any kind of green that you get out there, you can just very quickly parboil it, put it on a cooking sheet, freeze it, and then you get a gallon or 5 gallons or whatever that you do of greens that you can throw into soups. You can put it in with black-eyed peas because you're southern. You can do that. And that is... because people are like, what do I do with these greens that I have? I'm like, well, this is how you do it. You take them up, you rib them, you cut them into half-inch strips, you throw them into boiling water for 2 minutes, and then throw them into cold water, and then you just, you know, squeeze them out, put them on a cookie sheet, and freeze them. And it's a great way to have greens throughout the wintertime.
Cool. So, like, is this what you're talking about, like the mustard greens that you were saying before?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Mustard greens, collard greens, spinach, you just don't want to put them in for more than about 20 seconds.
Okay.
You know, with greens, you have to
watch. What about Swiss chard?
Swiss chard, about a minute.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really light green. There's a whole difference between kale is about 2 minutes. Kale, collards, about 2 minutes, mustard. But yeah, no, Swiss chard, no, because it's a very delicate green.
Oh, okay. What's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
I can't answer that.
Okay.
I have so many of them. Which one? I mean, really?
Okay.
I love them all. Anything I pull from my garden that I cook, I love.
Perfect. How about, do you have a favorite internet resource? Is there somewhere you go to find gardening stuff on the internet?
Actually, no, I go to my friends.
Okay, that works. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine?
Hold on, I'll be right back. I do.
Yeah.
And she probably told you about it. Carla Emery's An Encyclopedia of Country Living Old Fashioned Recipe Book. Ooh. This is the Bible of canning, cooking, preserving. It is an incredible book.
Cool.
Yes. Okay.
But I just remembered, you have to tell us about those, like, I remember you telling me about these rabbit things you were making out of an old bed frame so that the rabbits could eat
yes.
the grass and you could move around. So tell us about how you made those. And
yes, it's called, yes, a, it, it is a, right. Yeah. So
portable
you take
rabbit carrier,
a rabbit,
feeder. A grazer.
No. Yeah. Whatever. Rabbit grazer, a rabbit fence. It's like what you do. Okay. So you have, I got from the dump. I got an old,
bed frame.
I got a bed frame from the dump, but I also got a, door, a screen door that I used as a bottom for a rabbit hutch. And you have to get the wire. And I made a wire, a hutch for rabbits out of that, which I put up on stilts that are about 3.5 feet tall that are wood, and put like a door on the top and all that kind of stuff. And then I had a rabbit, it's something that was on wheels, and it was a bed frame. And then I put wire around that. And so once the first, and there are three different phases. One, you have like a 3x3 rabbit thing where it has a wooden little birthing box in it. And so that's where the rabbits are born. And it's actually adequate. And then they get big enough. And so then you move them into the other frame, which is, that's like the screen door is the bottom, and that's because it's, you know, it's open so that they can poop and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a wire around it, a wire on top, and it's what is like 2.5 by 5.5 feet. And so when they get big enough and you want them to go out, then you can open it and you can lift them up and take them out and put them into this portable traveling wire or rabbit fencing thing that's on wheels. It's a wheeled thing. Yeah, it's an old bed frame that has the fencing around it, and they're in there, and you can kind of move them around. It's a rabbit tractor. That's what they call it, a rabbit tractor. They call them chicken tractors if they're chickens. And the thing that I learned from this is that you have to wait until they're big enough that they can't escape. I made the huge mistake of putting them out there when they could squeeze out. And I went out and I put them in there and went back out. And oh my God, they all out of the rabbit tractor. I'm like, ah! And fortunately, they were small enough that they weren't freaking out. And they were used to my voice. And so I could pick them up and move them back into their little home. And do that. But then once they got big enough, it's like, yeah, the rabbit tractor. You just take them out, you put them out, and then you kind of move it from one part of the yard to the other. And yeah, and having it doing one of those wire bedding things on, not wire, but metal bedding frames where it's on wheels. And then I built it up with some rebar and then put the fencing around it, and if it's high enough they can't jump out of it, and then you just kind of pick it up and you just kind of move it.
Oh, so it doesn't have a lid?
No. No, because well, they're small enough they can't jump out of it.
Okay.
But they're big enough that they can't jump through it. You know, it's kind of like one of those. Yeah, that I'll never forget that. It was like, oh my God, my bunnies are all out in the yard. I mean, it was great. But once we figured it out, then no, it was really cool. You know, you just get them out, put them in there, and just kind of like move them around. And but what I did is I did that during the day. And at night, though, I would always go in there and pick them up and move them back into their cage.
Right.
Which, again, was elevated off the ground. And there's a wire cage underneath it. And you get it and you have to, like, you know, hose it out. And another very important thing that I learned was that that needs to be fenced around. When you put the rabbits in the rabbit tractor and take them out and let them walk around, because they're on the ground and then there's fence all around it so they can't get out on the bottom and everything, then it's nice. You know, hey, look at this. There's some dandelions over there. Eat those dandelions. Aww. But you can't leave them out there unguarded 24 hours because of wild animals and because neighbors' dogs. And so it's just, but it was great, you know. Mm-hmm. It works. It works fine. I still have it, and I look forward to doing it again.
Cool. Okay, thanks for sharing that. Ready for my final question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Alice, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I think the most important environmental issue is one that is one of social consciousness and one in which we get over this idea that we have to be separate because of religious and national ideals, and also one in which that corporate greed is a predominant driving of economic resources. In a sense, it's not an easy question, but basically it boils down to we just all have to realize that we're all human. We all live here, and we need to get along to survive.
Very nice. Do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Start with a plant on your porch. Grow plants. Start growing plants and enjoy it. Put some lettuce in a pot. Love it, and move on. How's that?
That is perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Jackie. It was so good talking to you.
Yeah, it was fun talking to you. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.